Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Real Sports Talk Radio, courtesy of
Well, I will say that we are not at Real Sports Talk Radio. We're just at the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio from a very wet, damp, and congested New York City. Thank you very much for taking an hour to an hour and a half and maybe even 2 hours out of your night. I do understand that some of you are at home without power. Well, if you're without power, you're not listening to this. But you may be without cell phone service, and then you may be listening to us on the Internet. You know what? It's been a really, really miserable couple of days in the New York area, all across the – all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And we are pleased and humble by the fact that you take a couple hours out of your day, today of all days, to spend with us. Seth, welcome to the show. We missed you last week, buddy.
I was going to say, welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the show. There you go. Welcome back.
I was, as well, some of you know, I was down in Antigua for a really tough 6 days. my beloved sister Michelle was getting married to her long-term boyfriend, so all went well, but it was not exactly, it was not opportune for me to call in and run a show. So I left the it in the capable arms of hands of my partner. That doesn't sound good. But, and apparently he got a lot of hits. So apparently people like you. Me? Yeah. You? Not too bad.
Well, so, I think people were just really showing some pity, because for a half hour, and that's all I could go without going hoarse, I talked incessantly, went down all the football picks. As one of my friends who did listen to this show said, you threw out every stat you could possibly think of in regards to the World Series and the football, and then you came to a half hour and you ran out of stats. So you said, we're done. And I was like, yeah, that's about right, because honestly, I didn't have much to go on. It is much better having somebody to talk to. There's no question about that. And all my friends were out of town or in Antigua. So, I mean, it was hard, but 450 hits, not a bad deal. We're trying to break that record tonight on the NBA preview. If you'd like to call in 760-283-0846. But we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the World Series. 4-0, Giants, second World Series in 3 years, second World Series winner in 3 years. For a team that really shouldn't have won anything, number one, and again, as we said earlier, a couple weeks ago, and it was proved to be true, the worst television-rated World Series of all time.
I mean, I am admittedly a little bit surprised about that. Detroit is not a small market. The San Francisco-Oakland area is not a small market. The problem is you have baseball running for all intents and purposes almost into November. And after a while, it's just too long of a playoff. Now, I say the same about hockey. I say the same about the NBA. But those are 80 games. Well, NBA is 80 games. I don't know what hockey is going to be. But you have a 162-game season followed by a one-game wild card, followed by a 5-game wild card, followed by a 7, followed by a 7. I'm bored just even saying that out loud. It's too long. It's not, you know, the sport has peaked many years ago in regards to popularity. It is by far fallen to the number 3 sport nationwide. I don't think there's much question about that due to the resurgence of the NBA in the last 3 or 4 years.
Wait, you think it's number 2? I think it may be
number
3. Beyond the NFL, it's definitely 10.
Sean, I said number 3. So it's the number 3. It is unquestionably the number 3 sport. I don't think there's a doubt that the NBA has surged past it due to what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, baseball has stagnated. And it's, I mean, credit to the San Francisco Giants, but they're not a great team. They're just a good, tough team. And I actually compare them in a lot of ways to almost like a New York Giants in football, where they just have to get in. and they're just tough, and they don't care if they're playing at home or on the way, and they have good, they play great fundamental pitching. I mean, who the heck saw Barry Zito from down 3-1 pitching game 5 in the NLCS against the Cardinals? They won 7 games in a row. Do I think they're a better team than Detroit? Well, I wouldn't have thought so going in. But, man.
Yeah, the irony, Seth, is twofold. First of all, it's perfect that the World Series ends and the NBA begins, almost like 48 hours later. So you have the World Series ends, a couple of days of football, and then basketball just, and then the NBA just starts. I find that ironic. But number two, do you realize if they went 7 games, game 7 would be tonight. So it would just be, okay, so we're going to start game 7, probably the most, assuming that both teams got tied, the most important game of the World Series against the opener of the NBA. I would have been interested to see who would have won the ratings battle in that.
Well,
I have a feeling the NBA would have won.
Actually, you're wrong. If game 4 was Sunday night,
You're right. Game 7 would be in November.
Yeah, game 7 would have been on Thursday.
Yeah.
Because you'd have had game 5 would have been yesterday. Today would have been a day off of travel, and then you've had game 6, game 7.
Yeah, you're right.
And the games are on too late. They're running too long. And, you know, it is what it is. You want to televise games that start at 8:30 court. I don't understand why. It makes no sense to me. But this is what you choose to do. So your audience that you're trying to draw, you know, the younger part of your demographic, the 10, 12, 15-year, you know, 14-year-olds, can't stay up till 12 o'clock watching these games. And every game ends at 11:30, 12 o'clock. It doesn't work.
Well,
and,
I mean, the same thing applies. And this is the reason why the NFL moved Monday Night Football back to 8:30 instead of 9, which was, I believe, 5 years ago. You can't start a game any earlier on the West Coast than 5:30. You just can't, because I understand your demographic. You want to get those 10, 15-year-old kids. But those 10, 15-year-old kids are not the ones buying products. Those aren't the ones that you may want. It may be a better long-term investment to have those. But short-term, for advertisers, they're looking for 18 to 35-year-olds, 18 to 45-year-olds. And those people are the ones that are working. You can't start it any earlier than 5:30 on the West Coast, which means
on
the weekend slide on the East.
On weekend games, you're going to tell me you can't play an afternoon game?
Sure you can. So you're going to go, you're going to play an afternoon game against all the National Football League games? You're not going to do that either.
On a Saturday? You can't? Against
college? No, on Sunday. I'm not.
I would take my chance. I don't know. I guess to me, you're just in an absolute no-win situation. And you have to make a determination. Well, you know what? If a game starts at 4:30 on the West Coast, they miss the first 2 or 3 innings. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. But this isn't working. I know that. And
I think that's the point. Nobody knows how to make it work. And the NFL struggled with it for a long time with Sunday night and Monday night football, finally bringing back a half hour. But that only happens once a week, as opposed to the Major League Baseball, which basically happens for 4 weeks every night. So I understand
right.
what you're saying. The question is, and it's been, I mean, that's not something that's unusual. When you get into the fall, you have a problem. You have a big problem as to when to put games on. And you're right. It is a no-win situation. None. I mean, the only winner you could have is if the Mets play the Yankees and you start at 7 o'clock in the 7 o'clock in the evening on the East Coast. Because quite frankly, nobody on the West Coast is going to pay attention.
Right. And ironically, if you remember correctly, I think the Yankees Mets was one of the worst rated series TV wise ever
right.
back in 2000. But I understand your point. Obviously, this is going to be a show that's pretty much NBA based, and which has been nice because we've taken a nice hiatus. There's been no Dwight Howard talk for a while, which was enjoyable. But we do want to hit on some NFL, a little bit of college. I always joke about, and this is kind of a dubious thing, but Maryland apparently has set a record Never has a team lost five quarterbacks in a four-month span. My beloved Terps, who are now 4-4.
We're going to start calling them the Burps, not the Terps, the Burps.
I don't really know what that means, but okay.
That just means it's disgusting coming out. Go ahead.
Oh. Well, to be fair, if you had lost your last five, your five quarterbacks, you may have to bring back Donovan McNabb.
And then we might win.
He may. But, I mean, or we would have to bring back Boomer Esiason or, God, Stan Humphries. We have lost five quarterbacks in 2 months, starting with the transfer of Danny O'Brien, C.J. Brown going down, then Perry Hillis 2 weeks ago, Devin Brown two weeks ago, last week, Perry Hillis, Perry Rowe, or Caleb Rowe, excuse me. So we are now starting a backup linebacker at quarterback and our backup tight end as our second string. And so I am usually an optimistic Maryland fan, although not as much with football as I am with basketball, but we'll get to that in a couple weeks. There is not too much reason for optimism there.
Yeah, it's not the best of situations. And the only thing that this reminds me of, and it actually is reminding me of that, is it reminds me of Bobby Boucher in The Waterboy. The Waterboy, where he says, Bobby Boucher, the Waterboy, is now playing quarterback. You know, you got to put it all on the line, Dan, all the time.
How did I know you'd come up with a horrible movie quote? One of the worst. What an awful movie that was.
Yes, agreed. But Bob, I mean, you have a linebacker playing quarterback. I mean, come on now. It's Bobby Boucher. It's all about
that. Thank you for reminding me of that fact. The only memorable part about that line is I actually went to the premiere of that when I was living in Maryland. And surrounded by about 500 Redskin fans, was when Lawrence Taylor made a joke about cocaine. And I just kind of groaned and everyone just laughed at me. But going forward, just quickly on college football, Notre Dame, as much as I hate to admit it, they're legitimate. They went to Oklahoma, dominating a pretty solid, maybe not dominating the right word, but beating pretty convincingly a top 10 Oklahoma team on the road. You know, and they have a three-game, relatively easy run going to South Carolina University, USC, late November. And if they win that, they're undefeated. You know, the BCS is looking at a very interesting quandary because you're looking, and I know it's early to say this, you are looking at four teams that will potentially be undefeated. And every year we say this, every year they fall by the wayside. I don't see that happening this year. I don't know if Notre Dame can go to USC and win. I do think Oregon beats USC this week. I think Kansas State is outstanding. I think Bill Snyder is the best coach in the country. Yes, I know Nick Saban's a god, but everyone and their mother wants to go to wants to go to Alabama and play for Saban. Who the hell wants to go to Manhattan, Kansas? This guy built the team from the single worst team in college football. They were a triple overtime pass away from going to a national title game years back. He retires, he comes back, and led by a better version of Tim Tebow and Colin Klein, and I realize that's blasphemy to evangelicals who are listening. This team is going to be favored to win every game going forward, and I don't know what you do with this.
So is there a comparison, and you know how much I love my beloved Orangemen, is there a comparison between Bill Snyder and Jim Boeheim in some way? In the fact that they can recruit and put together their own system and win in a place where you just go, how on earth do they recruit in that environment?
No, I don't think it's the same, and I'll tell you why. Number one, all credit to Jim Boeheim, who we may be getting a surprise. We may be getting an interview in a few weeks. We're kind of hopeful on that. By the way, check out Back Sports page for our latest interviews with Jim Kelly and Vince Carter. It was a pretty good plug, wasn't it? Syracuse was not the worst team in college basketball when Boeheim came. They may not have been a great team. Kansas State was the worst team in college football. They were about 0-36-2, something like that over the last 3 years, number one. Number two, Syracuse, it all credit to Jim Boeheim. you know, Syracuse gets big recruits now. They were in the running for Nerlin Knowles. They get top 30, top – they may not get the top five. Occasionally they do. But they get top 50 to 75, you know, top 20 recruits.
Right, but how do they do that? But how do they do that? They do it because of Mahon. Because
there's no other reason
to go to Syracuse.
I agree. I can't understand why anyone would go to Syracuse. I live in the middle of New York. It's the middle of nowhere. But it's a private school. I don't see that, you know, it's not cost-effectively, you know, it's not like you're paying $50,000 to go to Harvard. You know, I'll talk to you about this. It's not like three-quarters of my friends go to Syracuse or have gone to Syracuse. It's not an offensive comment towards that. It's, I don't quite, you know, it's a good school, but it's not an Ivy League. It's in the middle of nowhere, so the weather's not great. So I'm not quite sure what the appeal is, unless you're going to Newhouse. But the amazing thing about Bill Snyder is they don't get top 20, 50, 100 recruits. They get JUCOs and top 1,000 recruits. They get two-star guys, and he puts this team together. That's what's so amazing. He doesn't do it with top talent. Boeheim has built a program where they get top talent. And nobody's going to Manhattan, Kansas, that's a top talent. It just doesn't happen. And that's why I think he's the best. I think he's one of the greatest coaches of all time in any sport. Because I've never seen anyone build a program like Snyder has. From oblivion to the consistency that they've had over the last 10 years. Now, maybe not always in the championship caliber, but from going from 0-12 to a consistent 9-3, 10-2 team is incredible.
Well, I think the legacy of Bill Snyder is the fact when he left that the program crumbled, and now he left for I think it was 2 or 3 years, and the program completely crumbled, and then he came back, and look what he's doing now. I mean, that to me is more a holy cow, it's a coach rather than it's the players, because that just doesn't happen. I mean, that effect on players, and that effect on a team is not generally showed that obviously. And for him to do that, I mean, remember, Joe Gibbs came back, but the game was a little bit different, but he did do something. But I think that was more of a testament to the players that he had, as in Bobby Bethard putting the players together. A coach that comes back from a little sabbatical doesn't necessarily have the same success that he did when he left. And Bill Snyder has had the absolute same success. And that's a testament to the great coaching that he does and player management. I mean, in college football, remember, the coach is the player manager, too. I mean, he's the one that dictates who you get and how you get them. He's the one that goes on the recruiting, him and his assistant coaches. So kudos to Bill Snyder. That's a great effort by him, and I wish him all the best. I mean, he's doing great.
So we should probably talk a little bit of NFL before we get to the big show. Well, there was an interesting game in Dallas. The game was over. The game was over, and then it wasn't, and it was, and then it wasn't. The Giants have taken control of the NFC East, and it really has become a mediocre conference, to say the division this year, which is shocking. With a 29-24 victory over, I don't want to say the hapless Dallas Cowboys, because that's not really the right way to put it. But, man, they just can't get out of their own way. Obviously, for those who saw, the Giants are up 23-0, pretty much did nothing the rest of the game. Dallas came back. The Giants took a late lead off of a fumble off of Felix Jones, tying with 5 field goals. And then Dez Bryant caught a game-winning touchdown pass with 12 seconds left, and his hand was just on the line. It kind of sums up Dallas. 500 yards passing from Tony Romo, 440, something like that. 17 catches for Jason Witten. You know, Dez Bryant has 100 yards. Austin has 100 yards. And they still can't beat the Giants in Dallas. What a shame.
Well, I mean, this is the MO that Dallas has had forever, right? They can't win the big game. They can't come out and win when they need to. And Tony Romo just went through it again. I mean, Dez Bryant was inches from winning that game. And again, the luck of Dallas, or whatever you want to say, in the Cherry Dome, is non-existent. I mean, I'm just thankful that Lawrence Tynes had 19 points, because that certainly helped every single one of my fantasy league games. But at the end of the day...
How many fantasy teams again do you have?
211? Way too many. way too many. But at the end of the day, the Giants are 5-2. And they're leading the NFC East by, I believe, 2 games. At least.
2.5.
I'm sorry?
They have 2.5.
2.5 games. I mean, to me, that's pretty insurmountable in the NFC East. I mean, they are in control. Them, the Falcons, and the 49ers are very much in control of their divisions. I mean,
yeah.
And looking at it from almost the halfway point, well, I think we are in week 8 or week 9. We're definitely in week 8. I think we're in week 9. We have to take stock as to how these teams are doing and where these teams are going. And I think you look at the Giants, and they're definitely on the rise. And then you look at the Eagles, and you say, is Andy Reid going to have a job after this year?
It's not looking like it. The bigger question is, Michael Vick going to have a starting job after this, going into this weekend? You know, Philly really going down without a fight at all against unbeaten Atlanta. And, you know, this is, look, for all the hype that Michael Vick has gotten and this team has gotten, and I always joke that until this year, you know, Notre Dame and the Cowboys were these teams with all style, no substance. Well, this year there's no team. Well, forget Notre Dame because they're, whether I like them or not, they're obviously legitimate. There is no team that has reflected more style than substance than the Philadelphia Eagles. You have all pro receivers, all pro running back. Your defense can't stop anybody, and your offense is mediocre. Can't all keep the ball. And you're looking at a team that's really in disarray. And, you know, I mean, I think next week we'll do more of a kind of a mid-year review, something along those lines. I think we'll probably push back the college preview, probably, I would assume, until mid-November. But, you know, it's ugly. It's really ugly. The NFC has taken shape at the top. As you said, Atlanta looks very impressive. The Bears somehow seem to find a way. I didn't even realize they were 6-1. The Niners have taken control. Each division is pretty much controlled right now. The AFC is a bit more of a cluster, but you still have Denver kind of taking control of the West. You have Houston. You know, the AFC, the one division that's kind of really nobody knows what's going on with it is the AFC Central, or I guess the AFC North, I guess it's called, with Cincy, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore. You know, Baltimore is leading it, but man, their defense is just bad with all the injuries.
The black and blue division, I mean, it seems every single year we write off Pittsburgh and we say that they're not going to come through and they need to reload and they don't have enough youth on their team. Well, as we have seen in the last couple of weeks, every time they need to reload, they seem to be able to reload. I mean, they have two stud wide receivers in Antonio Brown and in Mike Wallace. Their offensive line is finally gelling, and they should have David DeCastro back in a couple of weeks. Who is their top offensive guard out of Stanford. They reloaded that running back position. Jonathan Dwyer, he looks like the reincarnation of Jerome Bettis back there, where he just wants the contact. And Ben Roethlisberger is Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, there is no taking this guy down. Every single week that I watch Big Ben play, I am amazed as to how he stays on his feet. He's not a nimble guy. He's not a guy that scrambles out of the pocket. But he's basically like a Statue of Liberty, where he just takes a hit and just keeps standing there. And more I'm coming to the realization that Ben Roethlisberger may be a top 3 quarterback in the NFL. Because there is no player, and I'll say this with certainty, at least to my opinion, there is no player whose winning is based on one player more than Ben Roethlisberger in the league. If Ben plays well, the Steelers win. If Ben doesn't play well, the Steelers lose. There's no other player in the NFL. The closest one is Eli Manning.
Well, I think that's a legitimate. I think that's a fair argument. I don't know if I would go that far, but I can certainly see.
But
where
who else is up there? I mean, who else does it with a third or fourth string running back? A defense that has no youth on it whatsoever outside of Lamar Woodley and Lawrence Timmons. Everybody else on that entire defense is over 30 years old. Oh, I'm sorry, Ziggy Hood as well. So three defensive players, under the age of 30. Their whole offensive line has been shaky at best. And all he's got is wideouts, and how do wideouts get in the game besides the quarterback? I mean, I'm looking at down the league, and I'm seeing, okay, the Giants and Eli, but the one thing the Giants have always been able to rely on, if they need it, is a big play from their defense. Pittsburgh doesn't have that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you said Simmons and Woodley, but they're not youngsters. They're not 30.
No, they're 29.
Yeah, they're pretty damn close to it. As I said, I think next week we'll do a more detailed review, kind of a mid-season review. But, before we move on, one quick note, actually pulling this up right now. Never mind. White Sox signed Jake Peavy to a $29 million extension over 2 years and declined Kevin Youkilis. The White Sox signed Jake Peavy to a $29 million extension and declined the option on Kevin Youkilis.
Okay.
So, but we're about a half hour in. I think it's time to talk a little bit of ball.
You're about right. And tonight is the opening games. The Heat are playing against Dallas, I believe. You know, it's kind of weird being at home for two straight days and not seeing an advertisement for the NBA. I have to tell you, this has been the least marketed series opener in some time. I saw one during the World Series. And the funny thing is, during the World Series, they were marketing as Celtics versus Cavaliers, but they never told me what day it was. They said Celtics play the Cavaliers on TNT, NBA opening night. I was like, okay, well, I know when NBA opening night is. It's Tuesday. But you're not telling me that, so if I didn't know, well, what day am I going to look for? It's just very strange. Anyway, so the Heat play the Celtics on opening night.
Yeah, it'll be interesting seeing Ray Allen with his old friends. Of course, I'm not sure who are his friends or who are his enemies anymore. But there's been quite a few trades. Howard going to the Lakers, Andre Iguodala going to Denver. That whole 14 mega trade with Bynum going to Philly. In the last couple of days, James Harden traded to Houston. Breaking up the big three in Oklahoma City in return for Kevin Martin, Jeremy Lamb, and a couple first-round picks. Paul Aldridge was involved as well. I guess we'll start with that. What are your thoughts on the trade?
Well, let's understand what the trade is made out of. I mean, the trade is James Harden and Cole Aldridge going to Houston, and I think there are a couple of fillers as well. And the main guys going back, you're right, are Kevin Martin and his $12 million salary. Jeremy Lamb, who was a first-round pick this year out of Connecticut, two firsts and a second. And the interesting thing about one of the firsts, which is from Toronto, and this is from the Kyle Lowry deal from last year, that first, in order to be bequeathed to Oklahoma City, has to be in the lottery. It can't be a top three pick in year one. It can't be a top two pick in year two. It can't be the top pick in year three. But it has to be between 14 and 3 this year. If they're out of the lottery, then Oklahoma City does not get the pick, and they get it the next time that they are in the lottery. So it's a very interesting deal made by Daryl Morey, who is the GM of the Rockets last year. You generally see lottery protection on a pick. This is the opposite. This is lottery guarantee on the pick. Just an interesting guy.
And I think you also have to understand the premise of this deal. The idea being not that Sam Presti, the GM of Oklahoma City, wanted to get rid of James Harden and break up that great trio of him, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant. But Harden wanted a max contract. Oklahoma City, and you're the resident capologist, but between Kevin Durant, who took a small discount, Russell Westbrook, who took a small discount, throwing $48 million in a Serge Ibaka, which I'm not quite sure. You know, I'm not as big an Ibaka guy as everyone else seems to be. The $9 million a year you're paying in Kendrick Perkins, for all intents and purposes, by the time if you re-sign Harden to the max, which I believe would have been 5 years at $75 million, and because he could have signed, you can sign him for an extra year if he's on your team. So I think that's how it worked. And they offered him 4 for $54 million. The max on a 4 year, and you know this better than me, is I think 4 for $60 million.
Yeah.
And,
okay. So let me just correct you on one thing. There is only one player on any team that can have a 5 year contract. Only one. And that's been used already by Westbrook.
It's on Durant.
What's that?
It's on Durant.
No, it's not. It's on Westbrook.
Really? I thought Durant signed a 5 year, $85 million deal. Okay.
So what happens is he may have signed it, but it wasn't an extension. It was actually a re-sign. There's a whole lot of capology that goes on. But the concept is to protect the owners against being absurd, there is only one player that can be designated as a 5 year max player. Okay? And that's where the difference is. Durant took 5 years at less than max. And Westbrook took 5 years that was at the max. So that's where the 5 year max player comes in. James Harden, the most he could get was 4 years at $60 million. Serge Ibaka, you're right, got 4 years at between 12 and 13, so between 48 and 52. So in order to re-sign James Harden, he wanted 4 years at $60 million, which would have been a max player for a four-year deal. By getting traded, he could then sign that five-year deal because Houston did not have a five-year max player. So he actually gets $25 million extra from Houston that he was not going to be able to get from Oklahoma City. And he always knew this. If he got traded, that's what he would have gotten.
Well,
why was
to
this
be fair,
deal made?
To be fair.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, to be fair, I mean, you said he has the additional year in. So it's not $25 million more per se. It's $25 million more with including an additional year.
Yeah.
So it's not.
Well, he got one more year at $25
million. Right. So, you know, gave him an – I'm sorry, continue.
So why was this deal made? Let's understand why this deal was made. You would say to most observers, why not give him the $60 million? I mean, over 4 years, that's $2 million a year, right? Why wouldn't you just do that? There are so many salary cap complications as a result of that. Right now, for the five players, Perkins, Martin, Westbrook, Ibaka, and Durant, they are very close to the luxury tax for five guys. The luxury tax penalties this year are not that great. Starting next year, they are ridiculous. Sometimes two times, sometimes three times. It's the reason why the Knicks didn't sign Jeremy Lin, because it would have been an additional $60 million for one additional year. So why did they do this? Well, they did it for a couple reasons. First of all, let's say they do sign James Harden, and they're willing to go into salary cap, what I refer to as salary cap hell, to keep the core four and Perkins for another year. They cannot make any more deals. They're in Miami Heat territory, where they can only sign players for the minimum amount of money. Now, we were talking before how Kansas State can't recruit players. Oklahoma City is about, I don't know, 200 miles away, 300 miles away from Manhattan, Kansas. It's not Miami. It's not a recruiting bed. It's not where there's no state income tax. It's not Sun. It's not South Beach. You can't get the veterans to go to on the minimum contracts to go to Oklahoma City. And that's basically what you'd be banking on, is you'd have those four players and Perkins for one more year, and then all you'd be able to do is for the next four years of your team is get guys on the minimum salaries. And for what Oklahoma City does, they can't do that. it's not feasible for them. So they decided against that. So they get a Kevin Martin, and short-term, Kevin Martin is almost as good as James Harden. I'm not saying he's equal. He can't dribble and penetrate the same way, but he certainly can put the ball in the hoop. They get Jeremy Lamb, who Sam Presti believes will eventually become a mini James Harden without the beard. Very, very good player out of Connecticut from last year, sophomore coming out. And they get two first-round picks, with hopefully one of them will turn into a replacement for James Harden or something that will be a good building block. And remember, the great part about those two first-round picks, they're on rookie contracts. So for the next 4 years, once they get them, they'll be earning a combined $10 million apiece. That's why this trade was made. It was made with salary cap implications. My question is, why did they do this now? They could have waited till the end of the year and done it after he signed and trade, after Harden was a restricted free agent. The only reason you don't do this now is because you're worried about getting the questions, the Deron Williams questions, of of being a free agent every single day. Much the same way as Ty Lawson today was signed to a 4-year, $48 million deal for that very reason.
That's exactly the point that I was going to make. Was, yeah, the obvious question is why now? Why not let Oklahoma City make the run at it? Let Houston or whoever offer, or Phoenix would have been another logical choice, considering he went to Arizona State, offer the 4-year, $60 million, whatever the max contract they can offer, and Oklahoma City can delay this for a year and then make a choice at that point what to do. And the idea being is we've seen what happens. We've seen it with Dwight Howard. Instead, Sam Presti, who is considered by many the smartest GM in basketball, chose the Kevin O'Connor approach that he used in Utah with Deron Williams. I don't want to deal with this and listen to this for a year. I can get a solid shooting guard in Kevin Martin, whose contract's going to come off the books, a rookie stud in Lamb, and let's build forward from this. I think he did very well off this deal. I think Harden is a hell of a player. I do not think of him as a number one player on a very, very good team. But to be fair, I haven't had the opportunity to see him in that way in the NBA, because nobody has. He's come off the bench. He's always been a number three option. At times, possibly the number two. Now he's going to a team that's going to be interesting, and we'll start our team previews pretty soon in Houston, which is rebuilding. But they have the youngster in Jeremy Lin. They brought in Asik as the center, and in Daryl Morey for years has been trying to get a stud to build around. Do you think Harden is that guy? That would be a question.
I wasn't really sure whether that was a question or not. Do I think James Harden is a number one player? I think he is a Allen Houston-type number one player or a Latrell Sprewell-type number one player. He can be a number one, but there needs to be a whole lot of talent around him. He's a Mitch Richmond-type guy, who I know is one of your favorite players. I think he's that type of player where he's an unsung shooter, but he doesn't have, to me, the wing capacity, and I mean that on the wing, a 2-3, and the dribble drive that would be a number one player. I do not, believe it or not, I would prefer not having the ball in his hands at the end of the night. I'd rather have it in somebody else's.
Well, I think it's time to start our actual preview. You want to go team? How do you want? You want to go team by team? You want to start in our view? I guess the revamped and possibly, and I didn't think I'd be saying this for a long time, possibly the strongest division in basketball, the Atlantic.
Yeah, it is the strongest division in basketball, at least to me. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And if anyone wants to call in and talk a little basketball, because that's what we are going to do for the rest of the show, as you guys know, the number is 760-283-0846. And who's your number? I guess we'll start and we'll just go from there. The Boston Celtics, I think, are the only threat to the Miami Heat in the East. They lose Ray Allen. They bring in a quicker, younger with Jason Terry, who can do more. Courtney Lee is a solid backup. They bring back Jeff Green. Please explain to me why people are sleeping. Kevin Garnett is older, and Pierce is older, but this is an incredible. This team should have beaten. Could have beaten Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals. Why are people sleeping on this team?
Well, people are sleeping on this team because they're old. I mean, they are not flashy. They just do the work, and they're really one injury away from having a problem. And if Kevin Garnett is hurt for any amount of time, especially in the playoffs, and I know Doc Rivers certainly manages their minutes as well as any other coach in the NBA. In fact, he doesn't care about the regular season. He wants them ready for the playoffs. If Kevin Garnett is hurt, this team's going to have a problem. And even more so this year, I think a lot of it is going to be on Paul Pierce. Because without Ray Allen, I know they brought in Jason Terry, but Jason Terry is not a Ray Allen. He's not a spot-up shooter that can hit from anywhere. If they have an injury between Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, or Rajon Rondo, this team's in for a lot of trouble. And being over 35, which is what Garnett and Pierce both are, you know, injuries do occur. And I think that's why people are sleeping on this team. They definitely had some good additions with Jason Terry and Jared Sullinger and Fab Mello from my beloved Syracuse.
I had to throw in the Cuse guy. You might as well
and
throw
Chris
in Chris
Joseph,
Wilcox
they actually
as well.
They drafted two Cuse guys, Chris Joseph as well. I think that if they stay healthy, this is the team to beat. As the Knicks have seen right now, staying healthy is no easy task. And these guys have all had problems staying healthy. I think you're going to watch Avery Bradley come into his own this year, playing major minutes at the shooting guard position.
Where do you see this team in the – what do you want to do the teams first, and then we'll give the division?
This team to me is not winning the division.
I have them second.
I'm sorry?
I have them second in the East.
I have them second as well. I don't think Doc Rivers is – honestly, I don't think he's going to allow them to play enough to win.
I agree.
I think you're going to see down the stretch, you're going to see a lot of lineups with Rondo, Avery Bradley, Chris Joseph, Jared Sullinger, and Fab Mello. You're going to see him resting. I'm sorry?
Yeah, no, I'm laughing. I agree to a point. I don't see this team. This is a team built for the playoffs. This is not a team built for the regular season. I think they will cruise into a 4 or 5 seed with about 45 to 50 wins, something along those lines.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right. So moving on to your Brooklyn Nets.
Womp, womp. Yes, my beloved Nets. We actually have. Oh, before we go further, what team am I rooting for this year? As some
you
of our listeners know,
You are a Milwaukee Bucks fan.
Let's go, Jennings. as many of you know, I am a native of Wayne, New Jersey, 15 minutes outside of where the Nets used to play. And when they moved to Brooklyn, I didn't forego my rooting for them per se, but I'm no longer the fan that I was. So we took a poll on Facebook on Seth and Sean Sports Radio, and there were about 7 or 8 teams that were exempt. I will not root for the Knicks under any circumstance. I will not root for the Heat, the Sixers, the Lakers. I don't remember the other teams, but somehow the Milwaukee Bucks have won. So I'm going to have to find myself a jersey or borrow one because you probably have one because you have 9,000 jerseys and I have 2. Actually, yeah, the only jerseys I have, I think, are the Israeli soccer Olympic, Israeli World Cup soccer team and Fulham. So,
ladies and gentlemen, I do have a Glenn Robinson purple and gold jersey waiting for Mr. Kamen. It is an extra large. For lengthwise, that should fit you just fine. We're good to go.
Love it. I'll be wearing it throughout the season. Brooklyn. I want to put together one interesting. Oh, they're talking about one team that doesn't care about the luxury cap. There you go. trading for Joe Johnson, re-signing Deron Williams and Brook Lopez. I think they are very, very good. I'm curious. I think this is a veteran team that will meld together well. I have no issue with Wallace being, with Williams being your number one player as your point guard. They have some good depth in Telvosic, who they think is going to be a stud coming over from Europe. They have C.J. Watson, Kenyon Dewing. Chris Humphreys is possibly the most underrated 12-and-12 guy you're going to see because nobody really thinks about him except for his marriage to Kim Kardashian. And I think this team, more than any team in that division, cares about the regular season per se, because I think they want to establish that name, that recognition, kind of like how I think it's more important for the Clippers than the Lakers to win in the Pacific. I think it's important for Brooklyn to win the division, and I think they do.
I
think Brooklyn wins.
Well. I do. For every reason you just said, I think they win this division. I think, more importantly, this team has more talent than any other team in the division, hands down. They have more talent than the Celtics. I think it's interesting, the talent-wise, how this division goes. It's all about how teams will meld later on together. I think that this is a team specifically built for the regular season and not built for the playoffs. I don't think this team makes it out, perhaps, of the first round. I think they can be an upset victim in the first round of the playoffs. I think they are stacked athletically. I think Joe Johnson is going to be a fantastic addition with Deron Williams. And by the way, this is a perfect example of how the salary cap works, in the fact that Deron Williams was signed to a five-year deal, so he is their five-year player. And they couldn't re-sign Brook Lopez to anything more than a four-year, $68 million deal. So it is a perfect example of how the five-year and four-year work. Joe Johnson's on the old deal. He's got another decade to go.
I think 4 years, $90 million left.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But altogether, this team, at least their starting lineup, has the most, is the best athletically. They have Marshawn Brooks behind them. The Russian import, I can't remember his name for the life of me. But he's been doing well in the preseason. Yeah, I think this team wins about 50-55 games in the regular season. I think they win the Atlantic. I don't think there's any question about it. And then we get down to our number three team in the Atlantic, and that's where we come up to some questions. Is it the Knicks or the Sixers? And, you know, I want to say the Knicks, but I don't think so. I think it's going to be the Sixers. I think the Knicks are going to get in as a 7 seed into the playoffs. And that's asking for a lot, considering there are going to be 3 teams ahead of them. But it just tells you how bad the rest of the Eastern Conference is.
Wow, I think we're barely on the same path so far.
We're what? We're barely or we're eerily?
Scarily, I said, but close
barely.
Enough.
We're using another term. Scarily on the same path. Okay. Well, I got the 76ers probably winning about 45 to 50 games, maybe a little bit more, maybe 52. They are the young team, and everything depends on Andrew Bynum. If he's healthy for 70 games, this team makes the playoffs. If he's healthy for 40 games, this team does not. It's that simple. They had They had a great defensive presence in Andre Iguodala. He's gone. This is the step-up year for these guys. They got some young players that need to step up, including Drew Holiday, and more importantly, Evan Turner. If Evan Turner does not come back this year with a vengeance and be the player that they thought he was with the number 2 pick in the draft, you may not see Evan Turner next year on the 76ers. They got to pick up his option year, but after that, he's not going to be re-signed. He is a point forward in the Scottie Pippen mode, and he's got to play that way. I like this team a lot. I'd just like to see Bynum healthy and see what they can do.
I agree. If I thought Bynum was going to play 70 games, I would have had them threatening for the division. I think he'll play about 60. It's just my guess. I also like this team, and you pretty much picked my point. Evan Turner is the key to this team. He has not lived up to the expectations as a number 2 pick out of Ohio State. This is his year. And, you know, Lou Williams is down in Atlanta. You're looking, you know, this team needs a number 2 scorer. At times, this is going to need a number 1 scorer. And Drew Holiday is a solid point guard, but he's not a number 1 scorer. and it's up to Turner. You know, you have some good big men in him and Hawes. You have, you know, this team has some talent. But, and they played good defense under Doug Collins, who is just a phenomenal coach. But at the end of the day, if Evan Turner steps up, not only does this team make the playoffs, this team is dangerous in the playoffs. But without him, this team is a borderline. And I think this is a, I think it's a very easy top eight, actually, in the East. I think the West is much more muddled at the bottom. But it's got to be on him. The number 14, which I agree on, is the New York Knicks, who I am not as big, I guess living in New York, the expectations are higher. Amari Stoudemire is hurt. Jeremy is gone. Mike D'Antoni is gone, replaced by Woodson, who is, you know, gone from a running gun game to a slow down isolation defensive game, which will help Carmelo Anthony. And will help some of the 70-year-old guys they brought in, Marcus Camby, Jason Kidd, Kirk Thomas. I'm not as big on this team as everyone else is. J.R. Smith is not, you know, is not the consistency you would want, just in general. They are a team, though, that in a playoff, because they can play a slow-down, beat-you-up kind of game, and the key will be Ray Felton. And there's a team more than almost anyone else has a lot of different variables that have to work, I think. To be successful. And everyone in New York seems to see this team higher than I do. I have them about a little bit over 500, 44 and 38, 45 and 37. You know, I have about a 7-6-7 seed in the East.
Well, you're honestly no different than me. That's where I'm at, too. I thought if Amari was healthy, you may get 50 wins out of this team. And quite frankly, this is all on Amari. I mean, this entire year is going to be based on how he plays. They have a lot of injuries. This is kind of like the Celtics in the fact that injuries can kill this team, and they're already starting with Amari and Iman Shumpert, who got hurt last year in the playoffs. The rotation is not sound. They're banking a lot on older guys such as Jason Kidd, Rasheed Wallace. Yes, Rasheed Wallace is back in the NBA, ladies and gentlemen. Marcus Camby, Amari Stoudemire. I mean, this reminds me of the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, where you have a couple of guys that are under 30, but everybody else is way over. So do they have one last run in them? Well, for the Knicks' sake, you hope they have two or three last runs in them because this is the team for a while. But I think it's 40 to 45 wins, just over 500, and you're right. This is Carmelo Anthony is not built for the regular season. He's just not. He's not that type of player. But he is built for the playoffs. So let's see if they can get healthy for the playoffs. And if they do, they can upset the Nets in the first round. I can definitely see that happening.
Well, we'll get to that later on. The team wrapping it up is the Toronto Raptors, who had a tough postseason. They were desperate to bring in Steve Nash from Phoenix. Signed Wilson Chandler to Landry Fields into a 3-year, $20 million, kind of an incentive to do so. The team is not very good, but there are some building blocks. Jose Calderon is a solid point guard, although I think he's going to come off I think he's in his free agent year or his option year. DeRozan can score. Ed Davis hasn't been great. A team with some actually, and I'm kind of speaking lower about this team than I probably should, but it's a team in another division that could challenge for a third or fourth spot. I don't see it here. I think they're the five.
Well, from the Seth Kamen's rules of playing for contracts, this team should be awesome. Because there are a lot of players playing for contracts on this team. Let's start from the beginning. You're right. Jose Calderon, playing for a contract. DeMar DeRozan, playing for a contract. Ed Davis, playing for a contract. Those are three of the biggest players on this team, and they're all playing for contracts. So, if the rules of Seth Kamen apply, and I almost just called you Seth Davis, but if the rules of Seth Kamen apply, this team should be much better than fifth place. Unfortunately, I don't believe in the rules of Seth Kamen's. So, while I do think that there will be some improvements I think Jose Calderon will be one of those players that's dealt at the deadline. I think DeMar DeRozan will be the same 16-point player that he's been. I think that Abe Davis will actually play better, maybe a double-double guy, 10-10. But the guy to watch on this team is the guy that they just acquired, and that was Kyle Lowry. I think this is the fantasy tip. And I understand that many people don't play fantasy basketball, but every once in a while I'll give you the fantasy tip. Kyle Lowry will average 15 points, 7 assists, and 2 steals. There are not many point guards that can do that in the NBA. I think he, who was almost an all-star last year, may be one this year in the East, especially if he represents Toronto. Andrea Bargnani, do not pick him in fantasy league unless you need a scorer, because he does nothing else. Anyway, fifth place, maybe 30, 35 wins at most.
Okay, going in the Central. I think it's a one-team race in the Central with Derrick Rose still on the injured list, and hopefully he'll be back in January or February. It's Indiana's division to lose. They're solid. They're deep. They're tough. They're a star player away from being a championship-caliber team.
Yeah, I think, in essence, you're right. I think this is a one-team race. I think you're going to see some surprises along the way. I'd like to touch upon, I mean, the Pacers are very good, but they're losing Danny Granger for an indefinite amount of time with a knee injury. So that's a problem in its own right. But the good thing for them is the rest of the division stinks. I mean, there's not a good team in this division. And unfortunately for the Bulls, they can't pull a David Robinson, Tim Duncan double-double, because that's what this reminds me of. This reminds me of, and I don't remember the year, but David Robinson got hurt with a back issue, lost the entire year. They wound up number one in the draft and got Tim Duncan. Unfortunately for the Bulls, they are losing Derrick Rose. They could lose pretty much this entire year. If they're not in the playoff line, he's not coming back. But they're too good to not be in this race, to be in the playoff line. They're not going to be a bottom 10 team to win the lottery. They're too good.
I agree. I have the Bulls second. I'm assuming you're going Pacers-Bulls?
I'm going Pacers-Pistons. I like what the Pistons are doing. I really do. I like the pick of Andre Drummond. I think he allows Greg Monroe to move back to the four spot where he really belongs. I like Brandon Knight. I like Rodney Stuckey. I think Charlie Villanueva actually comes to play this year. He's pretty much in his contract year. I mean, I like the team. I don't think anybody in this division wins over 40 games except for the Pacers. So that's not saying very much in stating that the Pistons are going to be number two, because I don't think the Bulls win very many over 40 games either. I think you're going to have the Pacers at like 50 wins, and then everybody else hovering between 35 and 42.
I actually have the Pistons fourth in the division. I have the Bulls second. They obviously still have talent up front with Taj Gibson and Joaquin Noah, and Carlos Boozer is going to have to pick up his game. Richard Hamilton's going to have to be better than he was last year. They did bring back Heinrich. The team is a defensive-based team to begin with. I agree, without Rose, they're not a very good team, but I still think in a weak division they're the number two. My number three is a team that I think is going to grow enormously this year, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers, led by the guy who I think will be. You said Kyle Lowry. I think the number three point guard in the East behind Deron Williams and Rajon Rondo is going to be Kyrie Irving, the second-year player out of Duke. I think Deion Waiters, although I thought he was taken a bit too high out of Syracuse, is a good fit. They need a scorer, and he'll give them that. Tristan Thompson, they have some young – they're a young, kind of exciting team, and I think they're going to play with enthusiasm. The thing that scares me about Detroit is I see these guys – this is not an enthusiastic team. This is a team that's kind of all over the place. I do like Lawrence Frank. Greg Monroe has been a surprise to me. I did not think he would be this good coming out of Georgetown. that they have, you know, the contracts of Stuckey and Villanueva aren't great. They're kind of in nowhere land to me.
Well, I like the Cavaliers. I do. I just don't think they have enough pieces right now. I think they have three or four really good players, and that's about it. I mean, this is what happens when you rely on one or two players for so long, and then you lose those two players, is that you don't have a backup system. And while Tristan Thompson and Deion Waiters are going to start, I don't think they're going to produce as much as you think, especially Waiters. I think he's going to go through a lot of growing pains. Tristan Thompson, I think, again, will be 10 points, 8 rebounds. They don't really have a center. I mean, Anderson Varejo, who's going to put the ball in the basket for that team is the question. Kyrie Irving, I agree. I think he'll be a great product. I think he'll be probably 18 points, but he's going to struggle with 8 assists because, again, who puts the ball in the basket? If you could answer me that question, I'd put him second. But I don't, or third. I just don't see who puts the ball in the basket for that team.
I think it's fair. So who do you have? So who is your, I guess the team we haven't mentioned is...
You're Milwaukee Bucks!
And that's about as much excitement as I think you're going to get out of Milwaukee. You have two guards who are trying to, neither one wants to be there in Monte Ellis and Brandon Jennings. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch, but I don't know how good they're going to be. They traded, I believe, for Corey Maggette. I think.
Yep.
Or did he trade that for Maggette? I forget which. They traded Andrew Bogut to Golden State during the year last year. They're just not good.
Well, I think the thing with the Bucks is they're going to realize the same thing. They're going to realize the same thing the Golden State Warriors did. Monte Ellis is a great gunner, and he can contribute about 5 or 6 assists a game. But he plays Matador defense, and he's 6'4", 6'5". He can't guard the bigger shooting guards or small forwards. So they have 2 6'4", 6'5" guards and nobody to guard because Brandon Jennings doesn't guard either. I'm sorry, Brandon Jennings is probably 6'9" with the afro, but he's 6'5" without it. So
no, Jennings is not 6'4". Jennings is like 6'1".
Brandon Jennings?
Yeah, I think so.
I thought he was 6'4". I may be wrong. It's quite possible. I am looking that up right now just to see where we are.
God bless Wikipedia.
Wikipedia? Where are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's so 2010?
In any event, I just don't see them having the manpower, and they certainly don't have the defense. I mean, they have a lot. You're talking about guys that are also-rans. Their entire ball club is an also-ran. I mean, if you look at who they have up front, I mean, seriously, they got guys like Larry Sanders, Samuel Dallenberg, Marquise Daniels, Mike Dunleavy, Drew Gooden, Tobias Harris, John Henson, who we both like. But you're right, Brandon Jennings is 6'1". Grant Jennings is 6'1", and Monte Ellis is 6'3", which makes my point even more. They don't have a guy that can guard a big guard.
Well, let's take a step back here. What would possibly make you think I like John Henson?
We both liked John Henson at the draft. We just thought he was too small.
Yeah, I am not a John Henson guy. I'm not a big John Henson guy at all. I mean,
Thought that him going to Milwaukee was kind of redundancy. But
right.
Him going to another team where he can bulk up a little bit. I mean, he's only 220 pounds at 6'11". And it looks like they have 3 or 4 guys that are just like that. I mean, Larry Sanders is 235 at 6'11". Samuel Dalbert is 250 at 6'11". Mike Dunleavy is 6'9 at 230. They got a bunch of similar guys. And they're all journeymen. They don't really have anybody, and they're destined again for the lottery. Now, let me backtrack a second, because I forgot to point this out when we were talking about Toronto. Toronto's first round pick was the pick that was traded for Kyle Lowry. So Kyle Lowry came for a first round pick, and remember that first round pick
is now being conveyed to Oklahoma City as part of this deal, and that is no matter what. So while we have picked Toronto last in the Atlantic Division, they are last without a first-round pick next year. I think that's kind of important. So moving on to the South, where the defending NBA champions reside.
Wait, give me your division order for the Central.
Oh, I'm sorry. My division order for the Central is thus. The Pacers first. The Pistons second. The Bulls third. The Cavaliers fourth. And the Bucks fifth.
Okay.
I believe you were flipping the Pistons to fourth and putting the Cavaliers third.
Yes.
So moving on to the Southeast, which I can call the dysfunctional division, because, again, this is like one team and nobody else. I mean, the Hawks will do something, but it's not going to be anything major. So you have at least three lottery teams in this division, at least. So can we both just conclude that the Heat are going to win this division?
I think that's a pretty fair assumption.
Yeah. I mean, the Heat... And right now, the Heat are probably my pick for the NBA Finals. I mean, they have only improved their team as far as I'm concerned. They have lost nobody except for Eddie Curry. And they've brought on Ray Allen. That's a pretty good trade.
Yeah. I think we've gotten to a point that, first, don't make any jokes about Eddie Curry. As we actually, Eric Spoelstra has picked up his championship ring in Miami right now. I think any jokes about Eddie Curry have become redundant. I think to discuss the Heat, other than bringing in Ray Allen, is kind of irrelevant. Obviously, they're the best team in the Southeast Division. Going forward to, I'm assuming you have number two, Atlanta?
Number two, I do have the Atlanta Hawks.
Now, the big question.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you are a big fan of talking about contract years. Their best players in the contract year, and that's Smith.
That was what I was going to touch on. They started to rebuild, trading Joe Johnson for half of the Nets roster, and they brought in Lou Williams. They have Jeff Teague. They actually have some young, Al Horford, despite what everyone thinks, is only about 25 or 26 years old. The key is, what do you do with Jeff Smith? He is a brilliant talent and a head case. And, nobody really knows what he wants. He's in, he's out, he wants to be playing in Atlanta forever, he wants to leave. One of the more intriguing thoughts is if the two teams in Los Angeles struggle, Chris Paul is from that area, Dwight Howard's from Atlanta, do you think you have a shot at either of them? Right.
Well, I think the interesting thing is the only way that they could pull off a trade like that is trading one of two players, and that would be either Al Horford or Josh Smith. Now, Dwight Howard's best friend in the NBA is Josh Smith. So if Josh Smith is in this trade, Dwight Howard ain't coming back. So do you trade Al Horford for Dwight Howard? If you're the Hawks, you do that in a heartbeat. But Al Horford, to me, is probably the most underrated player in the NBA. I mean, he does everything you might want. He's 19-10-2 and doesn't say a word about it. You saw last year when he came back in the playoffs, the Atlanta Hawks were something to be reckoned with. I mean,
he also plays out of position. No, he also plays out of position. He's power forward playing center.
Yeah, but he plays it very well. Defensively, he's great. I mean, he is the heart and soul of that team. So, I mean, you can't take away Al Horford and his contribution. I think that it's just a very interesting, eclectic mix of players there. They got rid of Marvin Williams. They now have Lou Williams to play six-man, Sweet Lou. Jeff Teague, you're right, at the shooting guard position. I think that this team has a whole lot of talent. The question is, can they put it all together? And if Josh Smith can get his head strung on right, he could be a top five player in the NBA. He's got that much talent and that many ups.
Well, yeah, the three teams, they're kind of, I think, interchangeable. I have the Wizards. I have the Wizards at the three spot. The Bradley Beal pick made a lot of sense. They needed scoring, and he's probably a better scorer than Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. They have John Wall, who has to develop this year. They brought in Emeka Okafor. They got rid of a lot of their cap room to become a team that's a borderline, at best, a borderline playoff contender. Would you have done what they did?
No, absolutely. I mean, they gave up they traded Rashard Lewis in his $25 million or gazillion-dollar contract, which is finally over. And by the way, Rashard Lewis, now playing for the Miami Heat. So they gave up his $25 gazillion contract for Emeka Okafor and Trevor Ariza, who are both have at least this year and next year, and $15 to $16 million on the cap. This is a team that is in neutral. They're not going forward. They're not going back. John Wall needs to take a huge step. And when I mean huge, I mean all-star step in order for this team to do well. Bradley Beal, incredible talent, but needs to be able to hit that jump shot that he wasn't doing in college. And they're starting front court of Ariza. Man, I don't even remember who's playing power forward for that team, but he can't be that good. Kevin Seffrum. That's right, Kevin Seffrum. And Nene. And then he's got a huge salary in his injury prone. John Wall's out till November, at least. And I mean late November. Sorry, we're almost into November.
November is tomorrow. It's Thursday. So.
Right. Thursday. So yeah, at least until Friday. No, he's out until the end of November with a patella injury. And for a guy that relies totally on speed, a patella injury is not something you really want. I think you're bumping him a little too high. I mean,
they also have Jean Valery, who's going to be playing for them this year, coming over from Europe.
Toronto's got one of the top talents coming over in Jonas Valanciunas. But
well done.
Thank you. But we'll talk about him later when it comes to rookies of the year, because I think he's one of the top players for that. So my picks for the Southeast, I have the Magic coming in third, the Wizards coming in fourth, and the Bobcats coming in fifth.
I don't think we really need to touch too much on the Magic or the Bobcats. Do you really want to talk about them?
No, but the problem is the Magic are trying to lose every game, and they're going to finish third in that division.
See, I don't think so. I actually think they're going to be the worst team in the NBA this year.
Wow.
I think they are extraordinarily weak. Not only losing Howard, losing Ryan Anderson. I don't even know who's there at this point.
Well, they have Allen Arrington. They have Jameer Nelson. And they have probably one of my favorite players in the NBA, Aaron Aquala.
Yeah. I mean, it is a bad, bad team. And you can blame...
Yeah, the Bobcats are that much worse.
Yeah, those teams are going to be fighting with 15 to 20 wins, fighting to be either the potential to be to take Nerlens Noel's or whoever. Let's go.
Well,
to,
here's
you know,
a question
I think,
for you, Seth. Do
okay.
all three of them win in double digits?
Yeah,
do they
I don't think.
10 wins?
Yeah, each of these three teams will have at least 10 wins. That's
okay, and I think they get 10 wins because they face each other.
Yeah, that could very well be true. I'm going to name my eight playoff teams. I'll go up to the West first, and then we'll go back and do the playoff teams.
Fair enough.
So we'll start in the Pacific. It's a battle of Los Angeles. Similar to the South, you have two big teams and three kind of also-rans. I have the Clippers over the Lakers in the division. I think, as with Brooklyn, I think the Clippers want to continue to establish credibility. Chauncey Billups is back. Chris Paul is an MVP, is the best point guard in basketball and an MVP candidate. The question is, they brought in Lamar Odom, which I'm not quite sure what that does. But they have DeAndre Jordan. Can Blake Griffin become the player that everyone thinks he is?
Well, I think what you're missing is actually this team is built more for the playoffs than any other team outside of Boston. And the reasoning is, for me, is that two of their main players aren't going to be around until January. And they're going to get an infusion of talent in Chauncey Billups and also in Lamar Odom. Remember, they picked up Jamal Crawford to play the two guard until Chauncey's ready. This team has as much talent as any team in the NBA. I mean, they are stacked as far as talent. Can they put it all together? I think that's up to Chris Paul. And Chris Paul is probably the guy that I'd want to do that, you know, to any point guard in the NBA. You're right. I think they are going to win the division. I think they will surprise people in the playoffs. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Number two, I think you're right, is Steve Nash leading the L.A. Lakers into the second place in that division.
Yeah, the Lakers obviously stacked in the starting lineup. Steve Nash and Dwight Howard coming in via coming in. You still have Artest, because I think he's now back to being Artest. Pau Gasol and Kobe. Andrew Bynum is in Philly. The bench is not particularly strong. This is a team that will take some time to meld. I think by the playoffs they'll be very dangerous, but they're not there yet. It's going to take a couple months, I think. Although it's a team of veterans, this is a team that, you know, Kobe Bryant is going to have to not be, you know, it's not per se Kobe Bryant's, it's always going to be Kobe Bryant's team, but for the first time he's playing with a true bona fide point guard and a stud one, even at 38 in Steve Nash. And I think the team is very, very dangerous come playoff time, but I think they will take their time. You know, it's a veteran team. I think it'll take some time, but I think they will be very good come playoffs.
Well, they are the Celtics of the West. I mean, they're not playing for the regular season. They're not. They're a playoff team. The problem I have is that they have no bench. I mean, no bench. So they're going to have a couple of injuries. They're going to suffer a little bit. Excuse me. They're going to suffer a little bit going forward. Throughout the season, I think they wind up with about 50 wins based on the talent of their starting five. But, I mean, you got to watch out for Dwight Howard's back or Steve Nash all of a sudden feeling 38 years old or even Kobe Bryant feeling 36. I mean, they're not a young team. I think the good part for Kobe in that he's playing with a point guard is, A, he can relax a little bit and not have to do all the dribbling. Because he doesn't have a Smush Parker next to him. Oh, yeah, I went there, Smush Parker. But he actually has a point guard he respects, and he loves Steve Nash. He would never have signed off on the deal if he didn't. So I think that they do come in second place with about 50 to 55 wins. Now, just for clarification, ladies and gentlemen, when we say 50 to 55 wins, there are 82 games in an NBA season. So, no, there are 80 games in an NBA season. So that should tell you where we're going with 50 to 55 wins. Excuse me. Moving on. Third place in this division, I am picking the Golden State Warriors. I like their team. I really do. I like the fact that they got Andrew Bogut now in the middle. I like the fact that they have Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, and Stephon Curry around the outside. And they have David Lee, who can't guard me, but with Bogut there, he doesn't have to guard me. And he doesn't have to play out of position anymore, which he was. I think this team is definitely a possible for that eighth slot in the playoffs.
I think you're right. You sound fantastic.
Thank you.
I pretty much, you know, we're too similar, unfortunately. I like the Warriors as well. I'm not quite as sold on Mark Jackson as a coach, but I do, maybe the second Curry's ankles can hold. I think they have a small chance. I think they're maybe a year away from being a bona fide playoff threat, but I think we see some progression from Klay Thompson coming off a solid rookie year. Now, it doesn't get much recognition because of where he's playing. Hopefully, Andre Bidens can be a bit better. You know, David Lee, a power forward, you know, is a marked improvement in David Lee over center. I do disagree. He could guard you. I'll play basketball against you. You're not very good.
Stephen
but
I
Curry,
do like Kenny Smith's suit. Look at Kenny Smith's suit on TNT.
He pulls it off better than I ever could. They're a team. I mean, we say this every year. They're a team on the rise. I think they're in the right direction if Curry can stay healthy and Bogut can come back healthy. We'll see what happens. Fourth, I have the Kings. Again, a team with talent. The Marcus Cousins at the center, bringing in a mule in Thomas Robinson at the five, which at the four, which I think both you and I thought was the best place he could go. He's the best player for them in this draft outside of Anthony Davis. Tyreke Evans has to be better. There's talent there. It's just they've never been close to putting it together.
Well, Tyreke Evans is one of those contract player years, too. So we'll see what he can do. They have a bunch of fours with Jason Thompson, and they have a bunch of point guards. So the question is, where do they play Tyreke Evans? Does he play the three? Does he play the two? Does he play the one? They're going to try him at the three this year, so they will have a starting lineup of Cousins, Robinson or Thompson, Tyreke Evans, Isaiah Thomas, and their two guard. Man, I can't remember who their two guard is.
I think it's Marcus Thornton.
Yes, Marcus Thornton. I'm sorry, you are correct. That's not a bad offensive team. The question is, their bench, again, is not something that you want. I mean, they have Jimmer Fredette and Francisco Garcia and Dante Green. I mean, these guys are all washouts. They traded for James Johnson, who's a three-point specialist. Hassan Whiteside. These guys are all washouts from other teams. John Sammons. Why are they employing John Sammons? Aaron Brooks. I mean, all these guys were waived. They don't have quality on their bench. I think they're going to have a big problem down there. So, just the one thing I forgot to touch on when we were talking about the Warriors. Sometimes we talk about good trades that are made, and then we hear all these rumors that there are trades that were supposed to be made and weren't made. The Warriors will find out in the next year or two that the best trade they made is the one that they didn't. They were in the Dwight Howard sweepstakes, and their role was, we'll just take Dwight Howard for a year, hope he warms up, and if he doesn't, well, that's okay, we'll get him for a year. And we're going to trade all our first-round picks and Stephen Drew and Klay Thompson. Well, that would, A, would not have worked, and B, was much better that they didn't make the pick at all, that they didn't make that trade. So I think that they will benefit from that. So fifth in that, so I add that my fourth. I actually have the Suns over the Kings as the fourth team in that division. I have the Suns over the Kings. I like the Michael Beasley pickup. I think that they can score with just about anybody in the league. Can they play defense? That's a whole different ballgame. Hopefully Robin Lopez will be back, and he can guard the middle. But I do like them as the four. I do not like the Kings at all, and I think the Kings are eventually going to move to Seattle, and they'll be the fifth pick in that division.
Now, actually, kind of in retrospect, you know, I'll stick with the pick that I made. I think you're right. I forgot that the Suns ended up with Luis Scalia, who was a really solid player.
Scalia's on the bench.
Unfortunately.
And that would be the Supreme Court bench.
That's why I said unfortunately. I can't guess who I'm voting for next week. They bring in Goran Dragic, who, well, for the first time, will have a chance to run his own team. He's going to be in my running for most improved player. I think he'll be solid. I think you're right. As I said, I actually am going to change my pick. I can do that because, well, it's my radio show.
I don't have that right. It's not mine. That's why Seth comes before Sean.
Damn straight. So I agree with you. You're saying, you know, they have Marquise Morris can be hopefully will grow over a bit. Unfortunately, Channing Frye is out for the year. They're not a team with a playoff threat, but they will be fun to watch. A division that is very, very interesting is the Northwest. Led by the big three, but they're no longer the big three. They're the big two and change. We've talked a little bit about Oklahoma City. Led by all-world small forward Kevin Durant. You still have Westbrook.
Well, let's talk about this. It's not still have Westbrook. Russell Westbrook's one of the top five point guards in the NBA. It's not a still have. I mean, they have two of the top five players at their positions in the NBA.
I don't know if I would put Westbrook in the top five, but I understand your point. Westbrook. What did you say?
Yeah, I mean, they have the top defense, one of the top three defensive centers in the NBA. They have one of the top 15 shooting guards in the NBA. This team,
well,
they have
one of the top 15 shooting guards in the NBA means you're average. So that's
okay.
Not exactly.
All right, fair enough. I believe he'll be a top 10 shooting guard, believe it or not, and maybe a top 7 shooting guard, because until last year he was. He was just very underrated, and people didn't know about him in Houston or in Sacramento. Kevin Martin's going to be a stud in that lineup. He's going to be a spot-up shooter. They also have Fab Fabulosa. Actually, they're talking about it right now on TNT. Fab Cephalosha, who is a defensive stopper. Eric Maynard's coming back from injury. Reggie Jackson. I love that name. Reggie Jackson. Nick Collison. Terry Jones, who may be the Percy Jones, who may be the pick, the most underrated pick, the sleeper pick in the draft. They got some talent in Oklahoma City. I mean, just because they traded an Olympian doesn't mean that they don't have talent. They have probably as much, if not more talent than anybody else in this division.
In the division? They got as much talent, I think, as just about anyone in the league. Remember, Eric Maynard started for about half the teams in the league prior to his injury.
Yeah.
We don't know how he's going to come back. No, I still like this team very much. I think they made the right move, to be honest. I think getting Kevin Martin and Jeremy Lamb is a great pickup for Harden. You know, as I said, I don't think Harden is the number one player. You know, you said in the Allen Houston mode, yes, possibly. I think they did what they had to do. The team I love this year is in Denver, led by my favorite coach in the NBA, George Karl. The Nuggets are extremely fast. You know, we had a question that's going to be coming on a BST round table in the next week. Who's your favorite team to watch in the NBA? My favorite team is the Denver Nuggets, because they just run and run and run, and that's just how George Karl goes. You know,
ladies and gentlemen, let me stop you for a second. The favorite coach in the NBA for Seth is a North Carolina alumnus. Just point that out.
Thank you. It did make me gag a little bit inside. I'm not going to lie to you. But North Carolina teams are typically the most fun teams to watch. They play extraordinarily quick tempo. Ty Lawson has developed into something I don't think anyone saw coming. And, you know, bringing in Iguodala, they have, you know, this team, when they lost Carmelo Anthony, the team was supposed to fall apart. The team got better. They have Wilson Chandler, they have Gallinari, he's a borderline all-star. You know, they're a really good team. And I would not want to play them in the playoffs under any circumstances. They're almost similar, not in the way they play, but in their ceiling to Indiana, where I don't think they can make a title run because they don't have the one definitive star, which I think you need. But they are tough, they are fast, and they are athletic. And that's quite a bit.
We talked about this last year. They are the equivalent, or in some ways the equivalent, of the Atlanta Hawks from last year. They are a run-and-gun team without a number one, except for the fact that with the Iguodala, hopefully they can play a little bit of defense, which they haven't been able to do in a long time. Iguodala being probably the best on-ball defender in the NBA. So hopefully George Karl can use him on the ball against most of the shooting guards and bring that strategy back. I love this team. This reminds me of the Phoenix Suns with the run and gun, or for those that remember, Loyola Marymount with Bo Kimble and Hank Gathers going up and down. Hopefully they can play some defense. If they can, they can be second in this division, because remember, the third team, at least to me in this division, is a team that doesn't play for the regular season either, and that's the San Antonio Spurs. They're very content being third in their division. and they have their big three back. In fact, they may. This team reminds me very much of the Boston Celtics in the fact that the Boston Celtics had a big three and then quietly merged in Rondo as a big four, or at least maybe replacing one of the three. And maybe Kwame Leonard, who, if we didn't
San Antonio is not in this division.
San Antonio.
They're not in this division.
They're in this. Oh, I'm not in the Southwest. My bad. Wow. Did I just go thoroughly over?
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen.
If Nabato was actually on the show with us, you never would hear the end of that one.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am picking the San Antonio Spurs third in the Southwest Division. Actually, I'm picking them. Well, that's stupid. I'm picking them second in the Southwest Division. However, we're in the Northwest Division.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go somewhere else with this. So, my bad, when you're talking for an hour and a half, kind of gets there. So, third in the Northwest, you either have the Timberwolves or the Jazz to me. And I'm thinking that the Timberwolves take that step up, even without Ricky Rubio, to start the year. I like them a lot. I love Kevin Love. I am infatuated with Kevin Love, who plays the game. Thank you. Who plays the game like he plays a Bill Russell type game without the defense. He's all about getting boards, outlet passes. It's a lot of fun to watch him. You put Hakeem Olajuwon maybe. I mean, I don't know who the comp is to him. It's very hard. Maybe Jerry Lucas for those that go way back. Not that I go way back. But maybe they
Bill Walton in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Bill Walton. There you go. Bill Walton.
Again, better defensive player. But
yeah, a healthy Bill Walton. So I'll take them as the third. I don't know where you're going with number three. Are you going Timberwolves or Jazz?
I'm going Jazz. I don't know when Love is coming back. I don't know when Rubio is coming back. The Jazz have some decent talent, especially at the 3-4-5, at the 4-5, with Jefferson and Millsap and Derek Favors. I assume either Millsap or Jefferson will be traded. Enes Kanter they have. They always seem to kind of be on that 7-8 threshold. I actually have both teams making the playoffs. I do have the Jazz. Probably both of them are going to be around that 44 to 45 wins area, maybe a little bit less. But I have the Jazz over the Wolves. You have the Wolves over the Jazz. You know, anything you want to add on the Jazz?
No, I like the Jazz. I think it's going to be very interesting how they use their front court. They have four front court players for three positions, and that being Enes Kanter, Al Jefferson, Paul Millsap, who am I missing, and Derek Favors, who may be the best out of all.
Which is what I just said 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay.
I just think it's going to be very interesting.
Fair enough.
So, now we got the Trailblazers, or the Jailblazers. No, they're still the Trailblazers, who I don't really know what to make of this team. They re-signed Nicholas Batum to a four-year, I think, $64 million deal, $14 million a year. They have LaMarcus Aldridge. They have Wesley Matthews. They have my choice for Rookie of the Year, Damian Lillard. They could be a solid team, or they could just explode and just be nothing. This is my quandary team. This is the team that could be third in the division or fifth in the division, and I wouldn't bat an eyelash either way.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think anyone knows what to make of this team. Obviously, Terry Stotts is in as a coach. Nate McMillan, the longtime head coach, is gone. I don't really have a feel. Lillard is in my running for Rookie of the Year. Aldridge is a stud. The problem is you have to, you know, this team doesn't build. Aldridge will be in a contract year next year. And I don't think he's going to stay unless this team shows some noticeable improvement. So we'll see what happens there. Going to the Southwest, where would you like to start?
No, you can start because I've already messed up the Southwest to enough of my satisfaction.
I am going to go with The Spurs, as the number one team in the division, they're still the best. They're still the best trio probably in the NBA. And, you know, at least come playoff team in Ginobili, Tony Parker, and Tim Duncan. Kyrie Leonard is a stud. Boris Diaw plays well. San Antonio, you could write in San Antonio for 50 to 55 wins. And that's really without much of a thought. Popovich is the best coach in the NBA. R.C. Buford runs the team brilliantly. You know, the question is, can they be healthy come playoff time? And I think they will, and I think they'll be dangerous.
Yeah, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I don't think that the Spurs go first. The Spurs, like I said, are very much the same as the Celtics, where they don't play for the regular season very often. And they are merging in Kawhi Leonard from their big three, Duncan taking a little bit more of a back seat. If 18-9 is a back seat, which many players would die to have those types of stats, but he went 18-9 last year. Another team that we always talk about teams that need to win the regular season to prove something. We said the Nets need to win the regular season, and we said, who was the other team? The Clippers. I think the Grizzlies are very similar in that they need to prove to everybody that they can win. And they have a dynamic front court. Daryl Arthur got lost again to another torn ACL, but they have Marquis Spites. They have Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph up front. And their backcourt is just as good with Tony Allen and Mike Conley, probably the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. I think they win the division. I think that San Antonio comes in second. Coming in as third, I'm going to take the Houston Rockets with James Harden leading the way. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Wow, I'm really losing it. I'm going to take the Dallas Mavericks on their one-year contracts because every single player on that team, except for Dirk, is on a one-year deal. So basically, if we subscribe to the Seth Kamen's logic of having to play for your next deal, this team should be awesome.
Except for one thing, this team is 90,000 years old, except for a point guard.
Not really, because they have the point guard, you're right, is Darren Collison. They have Roddy Boudreau, who's 26 in the backcourt. They have O.J. Mayo at shooting guard. He's only 28. I mean, Dirk is 32, 33. I mean, I understand that Chris Kamen and Elton Brand are older, but, I mean, they're not that. This team itself is not that old. You think of them as old because of what they've done in the past, but they're not that old.
Well, I guess the other thing is, I am big on players in contract years, but not when you have seven of them. I don't think this team is going to meld very well. I actually don't have them making the playoffs. I have them as the three team in this division, but with Nowitzki out for, I believe, till December, I think this team falls behind early. I think they become a bit disinterested, and they all start going for the individual stats, as you said, in the contract year, which is also the negative in that regard. And we go from there. And
ladies
I have them.
This is the obligatory Eddie Curry is on this team comment, and now we'll be back to our regularly scheduled program.
Thank you. I do have the Spurs over the Grizzlies, but I understand and have no real issue with your feel with having the Grizzlies leading at come playoff time. Both teams are extremely dangerous. I have the Rockets fourth. We've talked a little bit about them. Daryl Morey finally has his stud player that he wants to build around in James Harden. They brought in Jeremy Lin from the Knicks. I think it's going to be a dynamic backcourt once they figure out how to play together. I think they're going to be. I think Jeremy Lin is a very solid player. I think he got a really bum rap in the country. I mean, just too high of a rise, and just couldn't keep that up. But remember, he's only in his second year, so it's given a little bit of time. It's got over Ask Isaac from the Bulls, who's going to be a solid defensive player, and apparently he's been fantastic in the preseason. They have a bunch of rookies, including Royce White, who, if he can deal with his personal issues, I think will be a Rookie of the Year threat. So that pretty much, you know, and then I have the Hornets in last. I am not an Austin Rivers fan, not the 10th pick. Anthony Davis is going to be a stud. Eric Gordon has to stay healthy. It's a young team. It's a well-coached young team with Monty Williams, but they're a couple years away from being relevant.
I agree with both of those assessments. I think Jeremy Lin did get a bad rap because he went from because of the contract he got. He's kind of like a Joe Johnson in the fact that they're both very good players. And I'm not sure how good Jeremy Lin is right now, but let's assume he's a very good player. But he's not worth the contract? Does that make sense? So you can be a very good player and just get overpriced. So I think
right.
he's going to have to live up to that contract for a while.
So we've gone through our divisions, and for the most part, we're pretty similar on these things. You know, a couple things here and there. Playoff teams. We'll start in the West. You have in the Pacific, who do you have?
I have the Clippers at number one.
Okay, I'm not going to do by seed. That's a bit too much. So you have the Clippers and the Lakers? I'm not going to do by seed. I didn't do by seed.
Yes, I have the Clippers and Lakers in the Pacific.
Okay. In the Northwest?
I have the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Thunder. And, I'm sorry, the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Thunder. Wait, that's 2-5. Yeah, the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Thunder, and the Timberwolves taking the fifth slot.
Okay, and you have the Grizzlies and the Spurs.
Taking the eighth slot. Excuse me. And I have the Grizzlies and the Spurs.
So we have the same eight. That's a bit depressing. Okay. In the East, in the Eastern Conference, I have a feeling we're going to be the same. Oh, I guess we're going to be off by one team. Okay. Who do you got in the East?
Celtics, the Knicks, the Nets, and the Sixers. I have the Heat, the Hawks, and the Pacers.
You're short of teams.
No. Oh, I am. Okay. Take the Bulls. How do I take the Bulls when I have the Pistons above? I'll take the Pistons.
Yeah, you want to try that one?
Take the Pistons.
Wow. So the only team that the only difference we actually have in our 16 playoff teams is I have the Bulls and you have the Pistons. Conference finals.
Okay. Conference finals. I have the Celtics and the Heat. And I have the Lakers and the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I have the same four. Who do you have winning?
Of course you do. I have the Heat over the Lakers.
Okay, hold on. Over the Lakers. I have, in a retro 80s style finals, I got the Celtics over the Lakers.
Wow. That would be, I would not enjoy that at all.
MVP.
It's Paul.
Damn you. I have said a lot. I was being clever. Rookie of the Year?
Rookie of the Year. I will pick the guy from the Raptors, whatever his name is. Janias Val something or another.
Most improved player.
I haven't even gotten it. Most improved player. Well, first of all, who is your rookie of the year?
I went boring. Went with Anthony Davis.
Of course you did. Most improved player. I'm looking. Most improved player. I'm going to take Eric Gordon. I don't know how he can be most improved considering he scored 20 points a game as a rookie, but I'll go with
him. I'm going to go with Paul George.
I am going to go with Paul George as my defensive player of the year.
Wow, sorry, I don't play this quick, people. This is Sean's thing, not me. All right, we'll do a defensive player of the year. I said... I'm typing this part as we go, so it's taking a bit of time. You took defensive. You took – who did you take?
Paul George. Paul George, Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm going to take Andre Iguodala. And I guess the last one will be Coach of the Year.
Coach of the Year. Well, I can't take Spoelstra because I should, but I won't. But I don't think that he should be. I'm going to take Avery Johnson.
I am going to take Lionel Hollins. And I think that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Is there anything that I'm missing? I don't think we need to do an all-NBA. I think that's sufficient.
What's that?
I don't think we need to do an all-NBA team, so I think that's sufficient
I think we've pretty much done what we need to do here.
Yeah. So we got about 15 minutes left, but I think I'm good if you are. So you want to do your finale?
Yeah, my finale. It's, you know, every time we have a natural disaster in the world, we kind of look at sports as an escape from that. And it is ironic that there was no sports pretty much at all last night, except for the boring Monday night game. So if you need something to take your mind off of things and you have power today, turn on the NBA. I know it's not the greatest thing in the world to watch, but it is something. I'm glad that you were able to share the last hour and a half to 2 hours with us. It is a joy to bring you some form of relief, if this is what it is, from Hurricane Sandy. It's been a great show. As usual, we tend to do these previews a little bit longer than our normal show, but we do have fun with it. And if you have any picks of your own, we'd certainly like to have them. So send us an email or shoot us on Facebook or on Twitter, and we'll get to you as soon as we can, and we'll post our picks as well on those sites. So that's all. And thanks to everybody. You know what? It's interesting. Thanks to everybody downtown in New York and in Hoboken, New Jersey, and all across the country that have been our first responders to this natural disaster, because without you guys, none of this works. So thanks.
I'm not going to be quite as profound because, well, I just can't be. I just want to give a bit of a shout out to the longest running commissioner, or he will be by the time he retires in 2014, David Stern, who announced his retirement last week. You know, he may have outlived his usefulness a little bit, maybe a bit past, you know, he may become a bit victorial in his later years. But when he took over in 1984, the NBA barely had a contract. And while, yes, that he was fortunate to come in as Magic and Larry hit their peak, and then Michael. But, you know, due mostly to him has been the international expansion. The sport has been up and down, but is on an extraordinarily high trend right now. And he will go down as unquestionably the greatest NBA commissioner of all time. And probably along with Pete Rozelle, is the best sports commissioner of all time. So I want to give him credit and wish him, well, he's got 15 months to go. And I'm sure we'll be making a comment or two about that in 15 months. But of course, by that time, the show will be the biggest show in the world. So, just want to give him a shout out. As Sean said, thanks to everyone as always for listening. And hope everyone is safe and having a few good drinks down in Southern Manhattan and listening to us, giving us a toast. For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamen's backsportspage.com, Seth and Sean Sports Radio. Have a good night, everybody.